G'day friends, it's Kieran here from the present. You're about to listen to an episode that was actually recorded in the past, but we haven't put it up until now. So pretend it's Christmas, put on your sweaters, and let's bloody listen to Die Hard.
3, 2, 1.
Here we go!
On this week's Ticket Stubs, we're all rocking Ticket Chubs as we discuss the ultimate Christmas movie, Die Hard. Hello, my friends.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Chrysler.
How are you both?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Are we all in the Christmas spirit?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I am.
My tree's up.
Yep.
Mm. By the intro, it sounds like Dane's tree's up.
Also, I just realised, I think that's the first time I've kind of bungled the intro as well. I didn't say the year.
Oh,
the
my
year
God.
Of the film. It was 1988. I didn't say it. Anyway, well, now we know.
It's okay. I've got some notes about 1988, which I'm going to get into.
Oh, my God.
Look at you just.
Because it's my week to be the host.
So much sizzle already.
You have. You've got my favourite film of all time.
Yeah, I know. I think it's funny because, like, we started out, like, we would just pick random films. And then now we were, then we, like, planned a few because it got a bit hectic. And then it was like, oh, it's my week and I'm doing Dane's favourite movie.
Unlucky for Dane. Sorry, buddy.
I've got ultimate faith in you, Kieran, that you won't butcher it.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Can I just say what a three-peat this is too? Terminator, Home Alone, Die Hard. Like, that's the best triple feature you could ever have.
Yeah, that's true.
Like,
that is very
good. I shouldn't be complaining too much that you've got my film because we've discussed two of my, like, Terminator and this are in my top five favourites of all time. And we've all done them within 3 weeks of each other. So, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm feeling good.
So then you can take
I'm
a back seat.
Jolly. Yeah.
Get in
yeah.
the back, Dane. In the boot.
Yeah, Kieran, how are you?
Yeah, good. Good. Getting ready for Christmas. Got the tree up. Starting to wrap presents. I'm so unorganized. What about you, Ryan? How are you going?
I'm doing good. Yeah. I just finished my Christmas shop in the Savo, so I'm feeling good. And I've been watching this new TikTok trend, which is amazing. It's called the Kool-Aid Man Challenge. Have you guys seen
no,
it?
No, but that sounds really cool.
And it's as dumb as you can imagine. It's just people breaking into walls, breaking through things and just screaming, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
So, yeah. So, yeah, if you're a little bit bored later on, go have a look at some of them because they are hilarious. How about you, Dana? I don't think I've checked in on you, mate. Are you all right?
Oh, is it?
You going
okay? Is it my turn to talk? Is it my
yeah,
turn
yeah,
to talk?
Yeah, you can talk. Yeah, yeah,
oh,
we'll allow
wonderful.
It.
I've been waiting for all of you guys to shut up so the attention can turn to me. No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm here again with my buddies. I have two more presents left to get for my Christmas shopping. But everything's wrapped apart from that, ready to go. Spending Christmas with my partner Suanna's family, and it's my first Christmas with them, so it's the big one.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yep. But I'm good, good.
I smell a romantic comedy.
Have you met them before, though?
Yes, no, I've met the family. Met the family many times. I'm excited. We're heading up. They live in the country. Bit of a rural drive for me, but no, it'll be good.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, but no.
Just make sure she doesn't fall in love with Jack Black, Dane.
Yeah.
Is that a movie I've not seen?
Probably. Yeah, The Holiday or
make
something.
Make sure that if you're not just friends.
Oh, I think we're well past friendship.
Ryan got that joke.
I assumed it's a movie called Just Friends with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
I got the joke.
Yes.
You're a smart one too, Dane, aren't you?
That is weird.
Yeah. Is that what all the kids are watching these days?
And the stars in the sky. Ryan Reynolds in a fat
amazing.
Suit. I'll be there. For better or worse. Okay.
What are we doing?
Well, we're talking. We're talking about I think we've probably already said it, but we're talking about Die Hard. What is your guys' relationship with Die Hard? Obviously, Dane hates it.
I love it. Very similar to my first experience of Terminator. I saw it on the telly when I was a little kid, and I think it was one of the very early deaths that we'll talk about. It terrified me because it was pretty gory. I was a big puss as a kid, apparently. And then as I got... I just watched this movie with my eyes closed and tell everyone it's my favourite.
It sounds a bit scary at times.
But, so I got into it, you know, obviously in my teens and stuff, and fell in love with it. I love the book. I'd never realised it was a book. It's actually based off a book called Nothing Lasts Forever.
Right.
And well,
I didn't know you know how to read.
Oh, it was an audio book.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
makes sense. It sounds like a Bond film.
No, no.
That title.
It's a very Bond title. Yeah. No, I read it about 10 years ago. The movie does a pretty accurate, adaptation to the book. You know, as we all know, movies to books, or books to movies, rather, can be disasters. But, The book is great, way more depressing than the movie.
Oh,
but,
God.
the only thing different is kind of in the book is Anton Gruber, which is Hans Gruber, the villain of this. And then instead of John McClane saving his wife, he's saving his daughter in the movie. But yeah, there's still very little changes. Anyway, we're not here to talk about the book. I could talk about it forever.
What about you, Ryan? What's your relationship with the movie?
I remember seeing Die Hard when I was super young with my dad. Because, like, my dad's in that age where this is, like, their favourite movie. Not saying you're my dad, Dane, or or anything.
You can call me your dad, Ryan. That's fine.
Dad always loved it. So, yeah, I've seen it quite a few times. And always really loved it. It's a great movie. Again, it's one of those movies that once it starts, it doesn't really stop. It like really kicks on.
Mm.
A lot of things are happening. I always loved Hans Gruber, the villain. I don't know. Yeah. Always had a soft spot for him. He's such a good little villain. Mm. And my favorite character, the limo driver. When I was a kid, I loved him. I thought it was so funny. But yeah, I loved it. It's a great movie. Except for, I will say, something controversial. This is the only Die Hard movie I like.
Really?
I hate the rest of them. Go put them in the bin.
You don't like Die Hard with a Vengeance?
No.
And Kieran, you haven't seen Die Hard 3?
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the latest one?
For me, you know I love horror movies. I like action movies, but I don't love them. So, a lot of action movies, unless, they're really, really, really good. Like, talked about last week, I absolutely love Terminator 2. But this one, I don't know. I like it. This is only the second time I've watched it.
Well, you need to check out Die Hard with a Vengeance, because it is great, and Samuel L. Jackson is in it, and he's incredible.
He's incredible in everything.
He is.
Except
John McTiernan, who John McTiernan, who directed this and Predator, also directed Die Hard with a Vengeance, and it's an absolute banger. But the rest, dog shit. Although I do have some good news. I don't know if either of you guys were made aware of this, but for a while now they've been planning to do a sequel prequel in the next Die Hard. So they're going to have it in the present day. Yeah, they have it in the present day. But also cut it like have like flashbacks to 1970s rookie John McClane.
Why?
Which is so fucking dumb. I don't know.
Are they going to get Joseph Gordon-Levitt to play Bruce Willis with his prosthetic nose and his contact lenses again?
I don't know, and thank God it's not going to happen. It got announced earlier this year that plan's been scrapped. I don't know what they were thinking, but it's so stupid because you can't have a rookie John McClane, because this movie, he becomes John McClane, essentially. He becomes the hero. You can't have him be a hero before he's a hero.
That's silly.
So, anyway, that's scrapped. Mm. A bit of good news.
Yeah, that's good news. I think I'm really getting tired of the current Hollywood thing where they're just remaking movies that have already been done before. I just want to see something new.
Yeah.
give me some.
They just find like a franchise or an IP, and they're like, "We're doing it again, everybody!" And like, Kieran, you don't need to see it, but the latest Die Hard, whatever the hell that was called, was horrific.
Yeah, yeah, I think that was a good day to Die Hard.
Jai Courtney, that's who it was. Why are they trying to make him a thing? He's not anything. If he was a spice, he'd be flour.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, hands down. Yeah. That's him. He's nothing. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. Is this a Christmas movie?
I was skeptical. It had been a few years since I'd seen it. But after watching it, it actually is 100% a Christmas movie.
It is. Like, yeah, I'd say it's a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, I was like, there's no doubt.
I mean, even this... The soundtrack, like 90% of the soundtrack, is Christmas, like an original sort of Christmas score playing underneath everything, or Christmas songs.
Yeah, which is like, it's so fun. Yeah,
I think the only time, we get a non-Christmas movie is a scene in the limo at the very start. Everything else is menacing music or Christmas music. Mm. It's fucking Christmas. go away, anyone that disagrees.
Well, there you go. Well, I just want to start off. We've just, let's set the scene for everyone. There might be someone listening who's never actually seen Die Hard or may not even.
Someone's asking, Kieran, what is Die Hard? What is this movie?
Yeah, someone's going, what are you talking about? I've never watched a movie. I'm not a movie buff. I've never watched a movie in the 80s. What came out in the 80s? So, fuck.
AIDS.
Me, okay. So, the year is 1988. And upon my initial Google search, it's a bloody good year for movies, boys. Some honourable mentions include Child's Play.
All fun.
Ooh. Heathers. Have you guys seen Heathers?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is that one of the...
It's Winona Ryder.
Don't think so.
That's like a classic chick flick, right?
No.
Is it? Yeah. It's
like similar, like Clueless and all of those. Is it?
Yeah, but it's way darker, but it's cool. But Beetlejuice came out this year. I don't know if you guys are into anime, but My Neighbor Totoro came out this year. Coming to America, the original Coming to America came out. Dirty Rotten Scoundrel came out. Rain Man.
Oh, yeah, I love Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
The movie that ruined my childhood.
Oh, Littlefoot.
Littlefoot, is mummy. And
that movie is so sad.
My favorite mention, The Naked Gun came out because who doesn't love Leslie Nielsen?
God bless Leslie. Yeah.
National treasure, Leslie
Nielsen. I love it.
And so we've mentioned this before. Bruce Willis stars in this movie. Up until he starred in Die Hard, he was mainly known for his TV performances. So he wasn't a leading man yet. And the role of John McClane was turned down by none other than Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, they'd be so bad in this role too.
Wow. a drastically different movie.
Yeah.
And the expectations for the film were pretty low to say the least. But they bloody surprised everyone. Die Hard grossed approximately $140 million. Becoming the year's 10th highest grossing film and the highest grossing action film. It received 4 Academy Award nominations. It elevated Willis to leading man status. And it made Alan Rickman a celebrity.
Yeah!
So, on that note, shall we jump into it?
We shall.
Please.
Please.
Please. So.
Please, can we talk about Die Hard?
We start off on a plane. Bruce Willis is there, and he's talking to a bloke who tells him the secret to surviving air travel is to put your bare feet on the rug and make fists with your toes, which I don't get, because if you're not on the plane anymore and you're not about to get on the plane, why are you doing that? But sure, okay, no workers.
Also, can we just jump in? If there's anyone, you're on a flight and someone takes their shoes off, punch them in the face.
Yeah, you're allowed to throw them out of the plane. What? If someone does that, you can literally open that back door and throw them out. So,
at least that guy was telling him, like, when you get to wherever you're going, take your shoes off and flex your toes. At least he didn't endorse taking your shoes off on the plane.
That's true.
That's a nightmare, though. someone taking their shoes off, or someone talking to me on a plane that I don't know. That's like, yeah, double whammy.
If someone takes, if somebody takes both armrests and they're not in the middle, that's
the worst.
Plane etiquette: yeah. The person in the middle gets two armrests, come on, and man. You get one. Get out of my.
You know what you need to implement? You know what you need to implement on plane seats? You know, because you got like the little shutter for the window. Just put like curtain rods between the seats, and you can just pull them shut, pull them across, and you don't have someone trying to yammer
that.
In your ear.
I would love
yeah,
that.
Love that.
Okay, well, we'll patent that idea. Come talk to me, Qantas.
Yeah. So they've landed in LA, and he's getting off the plane, and we see that he has a gun, and this is where we find out. Don't worry, he's a cop. And remember when you could take a gun on a plane? And then I also want to mention, he's smoking in the airport. It's the 80s, nobody gives a fuck. Nothing bad has ever happened. Nobody cares. It's wild. It's so wild to me that he's smoking in the fucking airport. But yeah, so this guy who's got a weapon on the plane and he's fucking smoking in the hangar, he's Detective John McClane, and he's headed to Nakatomi Plaza to reconcile with his estranged wife, Holly, at a Christmas party held by her employer, the Nakatomi Corporation. So yeah, he gets all of his little baggies and he's ready to go. And he's driven to Nakatomi Plaza by a limo driver named Argyle, who is super nosy, I just want to say.
Oh, yeah.
And yep. John sits in the limo because he isn't fancy. He's a normal guy like you and me. And so they're just...
John Everyman.
He's a blue collar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just chatting away to Argyle, and Argyle's asking him heaps of personal questions, and John McClane's just like, hey, I met you 5 minutes ago, but hey, I'll tell you my life story. That's all good. And we discover that John is a New York detective. He lives in New York. He's from New York. He doesn't like LA. And he says, I don't like LA because I'm a New York City cop with a 6-month backlog of crime. But
that's how he says
crime
it.
Doesn't sleep.
Crime doesn't sleep, and I did sleep for a bit, which is why I have 6 months of backlog to get on but yeah, and his wife lives in LA with their children because she had a job which turned into a career, and he seems a bit salty about that. So she moved away with the kids and he stayed in New York.
Hey, I'm walking here.
Yeah. And while he's on his way to the plaza, Holly, his wife, is on the phone to their children who are asking where their dad is, but she doesn't know if he's coming for Christmas, so she asks this kind of racist, stereotypical maid to look after the kids while she has the party. And then she gets off the phone and she encourages her pregnant co-worker to drink alcohol because it's the 80s, look out!
Yeah. Nothing can go wrong in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, chain smoking and drinking while pregnant. Yeah. The good old days.
Oh, yeah.
And the glory days.
Carrying guns in public spaces. And taking a gun on a plane. Who cares?
You got the holy trifecta.
Yeah. You can tell this was like, you know, pre-2001 because they didn't even have to take their shoes off to get on and off the plane. So, yeah. So McClane enters the foyer of the plaza and he asks the guard to see his wife. And he has to search on this, like, computer thing. And he's left Argyle. The limo driver's like, hey, you know what? I'll just hang around because I got nothing better to do. I'll just hang around in the car park and I'll wait for you. So he's like, Uru, I'm going to go find my wife. So he goes to the front desk and he searches. And he's like, hey, where's my wife? And then he finds out that she's actually going by her maiden name, which just adds more shit to the shit stirring pot. She doesn't give a fuck. And then this is one thing I thought was really funny. The security guard, when he sees that, like, who he's searching for, he goes, oh, they're on the 30th floor and they're the only people in the building. Go on up. And I was like, well, if you knew that, then why'd you let him search everything onto the fucking computer?
Who else would he be looking for? Yeah. There's no one else here.
Yeah.
That's a fair point.
It's a good point, Kieran. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so now John's a bit like, oh, she's got a maiden name. This guy already knew that she was here and who the exact people I was looking for and where they were. And then the security guard also reveals that several floors are still under construction in the plaza as well. He sends him up and away he goes. So McLean heads upstairs and everyone is partying. Holly's boss takes him to Holly's office, and one of her colleagues is in there doing lines off her desk, which is also red hot because watch out, it's the 80s!
Do you do that on your supervisor's desk, though?
Yeah, I know.
Is that like a power move to do?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
some snow beers. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Snow beers.
Merry Christmas, there's snow on my desk.
Oh, I've got some snow on my nose. Hang on a second.
Yeah, and then Holly rocks up and she's kind of like, oh my god, John's here. And he's like, hey, baby, I'm all sweaty. I was on a plane. Can I please get freshened up? So she takes him off to change his clothes. And this is another thing which had me scratching my head. It's actually the bloke that was doing lines on her desk. That was his private bathroom that they went to.
That she takes him to.
Yeah, so I'm like, yeah. Excuse me, why are you doing lines there when you got your own bathroom? All right. Jolly good.
And that's the guy that was hitting on her, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the same douchebaggy guy?
Yeah.
His name's Ellis, because he's Ellis. John McLean's like, oh, I think Ellis has his eye on you, Holly. And she's like, that's okay. I've got my eye on his private bathroom. So, I mean, there's a kind of like a little, I don't care if I need to flirt with him. I want his job.
Yeah. And yeah. Clearly, he doesn't want his bathroom. She can fucking have it. He's happy with her desk. So, in the meantime, the tower is slowly taking... Well, it's kind of slowly, but also kind of fucking crazy. German radical Hans Gruber shows up, played by none other than the electric Alan Rickman.
So good.
I love Alan Rickman, and I love him in this
movie. So goddamn good. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's got...
His voice is so, like, it's just beautiful. Yeah. It's, I just want to hear him talk. Yeah.
He's such an incredibly charismatic villain in this as well, and it just adds so much more to it. Like, he's, as we go through a film, like, he's a well-educated kind of villain. He's charming, he's methodical, he's patient and all that.
Yeah.
But he's also a murderous piece of shit.
Yeah, he's also a terrible dude.
It's weird to think, like, Alan Rickman was not actually going to take this role because he'd originally, like, he was a big name in British theatre, and then he came to LA to, you know, make a name for himself. And he was kind of like, I don't know if I want to play a German character, like an evil German character, like that doesn't seem like it would suit me. But then his agent was like, dude, take it. Like, what the fuck are you thinking? So, and then that kind of just catapulted him into the spotlight, and I could not imagine this movie without Alan Rickman in it.
No. Well, nor John McClane, like we were saying, if Arnie or Sylvester Stallone took it, because what works so well about it is that John McClane is just a normal dude, because he's relatively fit in this. He's running around with a singlet half the time, but, you know, if you have... two incredibly muscular men, like just mounds of muscle running around saving the day. You're like, they're fine. They can't get hurt. Yeah. They're invincible. Yeah. And
those two guys are puffier than the Marshmallow Man. Like, they're so big and ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's why it's so believable that he's doing this. I love it. Sorry, go on.
But and like John McClane's bowling as well. So like he just looks so average. Everything about him. And then... Yeah, obviously, for the rest of the movie, he doesn't really have shoes on as well. And then so he's so vulnerable as well in every way.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's so good.
But I also want to mention here, I'll throw a little bit of trivia in here. Hans Gruber was actually offered initially to Sam Neill, like, from Jurassic Park.
Wow. That's wild.
Imagine this movie. Like, imagine how different the movie would be. Like...
Oh my god. Oh. I mean, I would love to see Sam Neill.
I was going to say, I love Sam Neill so much.
Yeah.
Have you seen Event Horizon? Is that the one?
Yes. Yeah. I love Event Horizon.
But
He plays a weird villain in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Hans Gruber shows up, which is Alan Rickman, and John McClane is getting changed. He takes his shoes off. He flexes his toes. Oh, thank goodness he's gotten over that arduous New York to LA flight by flexing his bloody toes. Another life saved by making little toe fists. But yeah, then he's rudely interrupted. His toe yoga is interrupted by...
Toe yoga?
By Alan Rickman and his heavily armed team, including two main characters, which is Carl and Theo. They don't hold back either. They just walk in, shoot the guard in the face, and just start fucking shit up. And then they go up the elevator and kind of walk into the party with all these guns. And nobody really seems to be bothered by them at first, which I thought was really funny. Like, everybody was kind of just like, oh, this guy's, it's all good. Whatever. And then
the
and
strippers then, are here.
Yeah, wow. Everyone in the tower is taken hostage except for McClane, who slips away while they're like, there was two people who were getting jiggy with it in one of the offices. They're pulling the lady out. She's got her boobies out, and it's all very, they're all like, whoa, there's all this chaos going on. So he slips away into the fire, like the fire escape kind of thing.
Cocaine and sex at a Christmas party? No, thank you. Not my kind of event. I'll decline.
Tea and crumpets for old Dane.
Tea and crumpets. Maybe a little bit of eggnog.
Maybe, if I'm feeling cheeky.
Yeah. And then, yeah, and this is, you know, it's important to note, because he was doing his toe yoga and got very rudely interrupted, Mr. McClane has no shoes.
You never interrupt a man doing his toe yoga.
Yeah.
That's the thing, he's so unarmed, he doesn't have weapons or shoes on his feet.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, he's got it, one gun, but like you have to remember, one little hand pistol compared to, they've got machine guns, they brought bombs, they brought everything, they've armed.
They brought rocket launchers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he runs into the fire escape and he kind of sees like all the things that are going on because he's little peeking his little head out. Every now and then, figuring out what's going on, which I thought was really funny. So they brought the terrorists are going up, and they're gonna launch the rockets from the fourth floor, or you know whatever they were, missile. Were they missiles?
There's 40 stories in the building.
Yeah,
if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, and they were taking all these bombs that they were gonna launch from the fourth floor up to the 35th floor, which I'm wondering why were they doing that. If they were going to... Anyway, I'm thinking too much into this. But, yeah, so Gruber is posing as a terrorist to steal $640 million in untraceable bearer bonds in the building's vault. Which I'm wondering, in the 80s, $64 million in untraceable bearer bonds, who's the real villain here?
Capitalism.
Yeah. Corporate elite.
God damn it.
But yeah, so he kind of goes through the party. Well, he's like, he gets the hostages all together and he's looking for Joseph
Mr.
Takagi.
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 Oh my gosh.
I just had an aneurysm.
I had a brain fart, yeah.
Yeah, Takagi. And I thought it was really funny because he knows so much about Takagi. But it's like, but he doesn't know what he looks like, so he's just going,
he doesn't know what he. Yeah, he knows his school, his history, his family, and then he's like, "But who are you? I don't know which one you are."
But after all that,
I mean, he couldn't just Google image him back then, though. To be fair,
but if he can get that much intel on a man, surely he can be like, "Okay, now go take a photo of him."
Yeah,
like,
someone take a photo of the CEO of this humongous company that has stakes in 10 billion countries around the world.
$640 million, which in, like, 80s money, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a lot of money back then. Like, now, you know, we have...
A lot of money now.
Yeah, well, we have, like, Elon Musk and stuff like that. We have billionaires now, back in those days.
Yeah.
Oh, are you talking about Time Magazine's Man of the Year?
No, fuck him.
He's in the business Zuckerberg now. God. Fuck off, Elon Musk.
Yeah. And your douchebag haircut. Did you see his haircut?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh. It's like shaved on the sides and really long and like curled over. He's a man going through a divorce. So, is that.
Oh, is he separating from Grimes?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Is he separating from Grimes?
Yeah. The baby X124A is going to be really sad about it.
God, how's that baby going to have a healthy childhood? Divorced parents?
Well, I still think that Elon Musk is actually an alien trying to build a spaceship to get back to his home planet. I think that's what his MO is. Because he just doesn't seem like he knows what the fuck he's doing when it comes to interacting with people.
Yeah, oh, I don't know if you saw his appearance on Saturday Night Live, but he did not know what the fuck he was doing interacting with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like Scary Movie.
He's very cringy. Like,
piss out of his finger.
If you think that's weird, you should see how we pee.
So, back to Die Hard. So Hans Gruber, he figures out which one Takagi is, and he's like, "You need to give me the access code for these bonds. Like, come on, like we got a bro here trying to get into your vault." And while he's doing that, McClane's like sneaking around, being a little sneaky boy, and after failing to get the codes out of Takagi, he shoots him in the face. Just shooting everybody in the fucking face at this point.
It's so good.
Kablam up.
So good because he's, Takagi's like, "I can't give you the information. You're just gonna have to kill me." And he goes, and then Alan Rickman goes, well, Hans Gruber goes, "No worries." And the good old days of blood splatter effect from like Squibs.
Yeah.
It flies up against the office because it's like a glass office. Yeah. And McClane's watching, and this real, like, it's so good. Blood goes everywhere, and it's chunks of brain just stuck on the window.
There's some really chunky effects in this.
Yeah.
Like,
the very guy's meaty, kneecaps. Very meaty effects.
Oh.
Yeah. Nowadays, you got, sometimes because they want to maintain, like, the rating that the FCC gives them for certain movies so that they actually can be shown in all states and box offices and stuff like that. Because, you know, they want to make the money back. They'll kill someone, they'll kill them off screen. You won't actually
see do it off screen.
But back in those days, they didn't give a fuck. They just killed everyone.
I'll just chime in here with just a quick little bit of trivia as well. Just a little bit of fun trivia. So at the start of the meeting and whatnot, the camera sort of panning around the room, and you see, like, because Alan Rickman's looking at all the models that the corporation's built and all the things that they're going to be designing, and there's a little oil rig that's sort of out of focus. In the book, it's an oil company that they go to burgle.
Clever. So, yeah.
There you go.
Just a cheeky little wink at the original material.
Love it.
That's a bit of fun.
Very nice. But yeah, so the terrorists are alerted to McClane's presence, and one of them, whose name is Tony, is sent after him. But McClane, even though... So I thought this exchange was really funny because he's got a machine gun and McClane's got his little pistol. And he's like, "Oh, you're a police officer, you have rules." And he's like, "I don't play by the rules." But then instead of shooting him in the head, which he could do because the guy's got a machine gun, he decides to, like, wrestle him. And then he does end up killing him and takes his weapon and his radio, which he uses to contact the Los Angeles Police Department, who are very skeptical about everything that's going on. And they send Sergeant Al Powell... And that's such a Al Powell.
Great name.
Yeah.
Al Powell.
Is sent to investigate. And then he also writes in blood on Tony's jumper, "Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho." Which is just so good.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
That's a few chef's kisses, I think, Kieran. Yeah.
I think so.
is Tony the guy who gets his neck broken down the stairs?
I think so.
Is that the first kill?
Yes, the first.
Yeah, that's the first. That's John McClane's first kill because they're tumbling around and they come crashing through a door and fall down like the flight stairways. And
that stunt is good.
Bruce Willis insisted on doing a lot of his own stunts in this movie too, which I've got to give props to.
Yeah,
So good.
Yeah,
so good.
Tom Cruise got a lot of inspiration, I feel, from Bruce Willis. He's like, "I want to be from early days, Bruce Willis.
I love Tom Cruise. I will not hear his name bragged on.
Dane. I'm all in for Tom Cruise.
I'm all in for Tom Cruise, except for the Scientology stuff. That's a no from me.
Oh, of course.
No.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
Of course.
I always get so sad whenever I find out a celebrity that I really like is like balls deep in Scientology.
Yeah.
Like Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah.
Aww, so strange too.
Yeah, she's
like playing... she does handmaids. Like
about oppressing women, and then she's like really into Scientology. Like, okay.
What a shame.
You do you, girl. You do you. But yeah, meanwhile, McClane kills more terrorists and recovers their bag of C4 and the detonators. And then, having found nothing amiss, Powell is about to leave until McClane drops a corpse onto his car. And then he's like, oh, wait a second. Now I have to do my job.
I love that bit too. It's so funny.
Well,
yeah.
Because when McClane keeps radioing the police and the terrorists, they kind of patch into, like, Al Powell comes and checks on the building, and he's like, oh, there's nothing going on here. He goes away, and John McClane keeps calling. So then he calls the fire brigade and stuff, and they're like, oh, fucking, sir, get off this line, stop mucking around. And McClane's like just screaming and desperate and begging and pleading. He's like, fine, fucking come down here and arrest me. And then, yeah, he throws that guy out and smashes onto Al Powell's car. And that's where we get the classic little line, welcome to the party, pal.
Yeah.
And I fucking love it.
Jingle all the way.
I do also... I love the line that he says to the lady on the phone when he's trying to get a dispatcher out. And he's like, no fucking shit, lady. Do you think I'm trying to order a pizza? Yeah, when she's like, get off this line. Oh.
Yeah, it's so good when he just yeets that guy out the window.
So good.
Yeah.
So Powell calls for backup. A SWAT team attempts to storm the building but is assaulted by the terrorists. McClane tries to help, throws some C4 down an elevator shaft and causes an explosion that kills some of the terrorists and ends the assault. And they're like, oh boy, this is getting serious here. We better sit out the front of the plaza and try to help.
Can I just say something about that explosion too?
Yeah.
Because like, so the SWAT team tries to get in. They all get shot, but not killed. And they're all really badly injured. And then, John McClane puts a computer with some C4 and throws it down an elevator shaft. And then it explodes. And the explosion is so big, all of those guys would be dead. All of the SWAT members would be dead.
That the building explosion. Would collapse.
Yeah, like, that explosion is huge.
It blows out the foundation of the building, but the line's so great because McClane's like, he's starting to go kind of a little bit loopy because he's chuckling about this massive explosion and he's killed a couple of people. So, you know, he's a little bit, I think there's some screws coming loose. But anyway, the line's great where he contacts Al Powell again on the radio and he's like, McClane, was that you? He's like, yeah. Is everyone, you know, was anyone hurt? And he's like, no, but they're going to need some new windows and a shitload of screen doors. I'm like, that's great.
He's a bit of a witty boy.
Terrific explosion.
Yes.
It's
very good. I love Al Powell too. Like, he's just
great. Yeah, he's a fun character.
And he's just like, no, John McClane, he's helping you. Be nice to me, Mr. McClane. But yeah, so while checking the explosives on the roof... Oh wait, no. Holly's co-worker, Harry, attempts to negotiate on Gruber's behalf. He's like, hey, I'm really good at negotiating. I can sell anything. I'll go talk to the bad guys. I don't see any problem with that. And yeah, so he tries to negotiate on Gruber's behalf with McClane over the radio. But when McClane refuses to surrender... Gruber also shoots him in the face. He's just done a face shoot spree at this point.
And Ellis was such a good douchebag character because he's your typical like young millionaire cokehead, and he's like, I can do this. Like, he has no idea the kind of people he's dealing with.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna save the day here because he's coked up to his eyeballs.
Yeah, he's just doing coke, and he's like, I'm gonna do it. I can do it.
Yeah, and McClane's on the other end of the radio talking to Gruber and Ellis, and he's pleading with Gruber not to kill this dumb young kid, and he's like, "Don't be like telling me that we don't know each other," and Ellis has been smug and cocky. He's like, "Ah, I'm all good," and then Hans just picks up
the
gun and
so
blows
good.
His head off
because he's so cocky, and he like keeps smiling at Hans every time he talks to McClane over the radio.
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, I've got this. Don't worry." And then McClane's like, please stop. Let this guy live. And then he gets given the Coke in the glass. Yeah. And so he's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing really well. And then he gets killed immediately. Yeah, he's so funny. I love him. He's such a douchebaggy character. I must be in the good books. Yeah.
So my cat, Yuki, has just climbed onto my lap because she wants a little bit of a cuddle. And she's farting like a grown man right now. She stinks. You stink, lady. You are smelly. Anyway, so... while checking the explosives on the roof, Gruber encounters McLean and pretends to be an escaped hostage. And this part was actually improvised, was all ad-libbed. They didn't script that, which I think is very cool. Because they're trying to make it seem a bit more natural. Gruber attempts to shoot McLean, but finds the weapon is unloaded and is saved only by the intervention of the other terrorists. So they come and save our little Hans, little noodly Hans.
You're such a tense scene. So much of the best part.
I told you, you can interject whenever you like, Dane. What would you like to discuss?
Well, like the whole, like this is when Hans Gruber and John McClane meet for the first time. So John McClane's sort of walking around, and Hans has snuck up to the building to do like the roof of the building to do whatever, and John McClane catches him. And he's pointing the gun, and then Hans Gruber instantly, he's a clever cookie, and he starts doing an American accent. He's like, oh, you're one of them! And just pretends that he thinks that McLean's a terrorist. And they start to form this sort of, you know, uneasy alliance. McLean's like, you know, hey, well, I've got a buddy now, we can get out of this together. And he gives Hans Gruber a gun. And Gruber's like, holy fuck, like, I've just been handed this guy on a platter. Mm. And they're kind of talking and chit-chatting. And Hans Gruber makes up a fake name and stuff. And McLean's like, all right, well, come with me. Was it Clay something or other?
Yeah.
And then so McLean turns his back and Gruber starts talking German into the walkie-talkie. And he's like, oh, okay. I see. You pulled a fast one on me. And then Hans goes to shoot McLean in the face. And there's nothing in the gun. He's like, uh-oh, no bullets, Hans. And that's when the other terrorists come over, but it's such a pivotal moment because these guys have just been taunting one another over the walkie-talkie for throughout the entire film. Like, they don't know what each other looks like, and it's great. It's such a great little standoff.
There's a lot of tension McLean, in that scene too, because like the audience has so the information that the characters don't, and then you're just watching it unfold. And you're like picking it up.
And then it's like that Spider-Man meme where there's two Spider-Men.
Yeah. Wait, you're the bad guy? Wait, you're? Yeah.
It's good. It's such a great hero meet villain for the first time sort of moment. It doesn't last long because that's... Sorry, Ryan, go on.
I was going to say... You go.
I was going to say, it just doesn't last long because that's when other terrorists come up in the elevator and there's a whole big shootout and stuff. And we were talking about this, I think, last week in the Home Alone episode. Because they're in this kind of abandoned office that's full of glass cubicles and stuff. And so the Hans Gruber and his buddies start shooting at all the glass because Hans knows that John has noticed he's not wearing shoes. And John's going to run through all this glass to escape the barrage of bullets. And it's awful. It's like when Daniel Stern steps on the Christmas glass ornaments in Home Alone.
Yeah.
Just these big, massive shards of glass in his feet.
Hans Gruber really underestimated like what John McClane was willing to do to help
his
save
pain
the day.
Threshold.
Yeah. He's like, no, I'll do and anything to save the day.
That's the thing as well, like, about, because obviously, like, this first time we've said so many times, he's just an average guy. The second one, things are a bit more extreme. The third one, he buddies up with Samuel L. Jackson, and it gets a little bit silly in parts, but it's still excellent. And he still gets really hurt, because, the fourth one, he's the Terminator, and the fifth one, because...
Doesn't he drive a car into a plane
or something and then slides down
it's a helicopter in the
bridge.
Fourth one.
Oh,
yeah.
So dumb.
But so in this one, like he's hurt, he's bloody, he's sweaty, he's greasy, he's just like exhausted. And then in the fourth and fifth, he's just indestructible. He falls through, in the fifth one, that terrible fucking Die Hard Another Day or whatever the fuck it's called, he falls through like five glass ceilings and lands into a pool and just gets up and shrugs it off and walks away. But in this, he has this shit kicked out of him and you know he's hurting and it's so great.
Yeah. He's the underdog throughout the whole movie. Yeah. He's not the superhero. Yeah. He's, you're like, maybe he won't pull this off because it's one against like 12 or 14 terrorists and he's got literally nothing. Doesn't even have shoes on. Like he's,
And he's so scrappy in it as well because, everyone's so heavily armed, but he starts to fight more and more like a mad animal throughout it just because he's so determined to survive. Yeah, he just starts fighting dirty in any way to move on to the next terrorist kind of thing.
Yeah. And I would like to throw out an honourable mention to his singlet because it just keeps changing how, like, the variation of dirtiness it is. One scene it'll be super white, then it'll be brown and, like, he's been in a mud wrestle and then it'll be, like, kind of white again. Just wanted to point that out.
No, it's funny that you say that though, Kieran, because apparently, the costume department had 17 undershirts, which were all in various stages of like breakdowns, pretty much, which they had on hand for Bruce Willis. So it would slow the singlets. They had them all perfect to destroyed.
Yeah.
And they would,
but there was actually a couple scenes where they mucked it up and some of his... It was more dirty than it actually was like, a few shots ago, which I was like,
Well, in this next scene, he rips the singlet's now no longer because he's when he drags himself into the bathroom after he's ran through all this glass and he's escaped by the skin of his teeth because he was outman, outgunned, outflanked, and he had to run through this floor made of shattered glass. And he's just lying on his back, dragging himself into the bathroom, and there's this river of blood pouring from his feet. It's like, oh my fucking god, that's horrific. Awful.
And he's going to pull.
I'm glad we don't see more of that. Like, if that scene sat on him pulling out pieces of glass for longer than it did.
It's
horrific.
But this is what we talked about with other, like, obviously with the Terminator. They don't show the same thing happen. So there's a part where we see him pull out a bit of glass and examine it, and he throws it away. And then that's all we see. We don't need to see him pull out every individual piece of glass because you know what he's doing. And he's straining and he's grunting and he's got the tap running and he's talking to Al Powell to kind of keep his mind off the pain from ripping out this, you know, fucking fluorescent light from underneath his toes.
Can I just quickly mention... in the scene before, when he's about to run through all the glass, there's a really good double knee explosion from John McClane's handgun.
Yeah,
he shoots a guy in both kneecaps, which just explode into big chunks. Which I was like, that is amazing. And then that terrorist falls through a thing of glass right in front of John McClane. And I was like, oh, poor dude.
It's such a great death.
It's so good. Yeah, I think that's my favorite death.
And he eats glass. It's wonderful.
It's also important to
know. It's so good.
He also in that gunfight, John McClane loses the detonators. So now he's like really.
Yes.
He's up shit. He leaves them behind. Yeah. Yeah. He's just. No good.
Yeah.
So outside, the FBI agents take control. They order the power to be shut off, which Gruber, because he is a very clever boy...
Smarty boy.
Yeah, he's anticipated. And so he disables the final vault lock so his team can collect the bonds. And Gruber starts to demand a whole bunch of shit from the FBI. He's like, I want these people released from prison, and I want a helicopter, and I want this, and blah, 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 blah. And the FBI agrees to... the demand of a helicopter, but they're intending to send a gunship to eliminate the group. And then little do they know that Gruber plans to blow the roof off to kill the hostages and fake his team's death, which McClane realizes. So he's like, oh no, now I've got to stop him even more.
Well, the requests as well that he makes, it's just to give the FBI the runaround and basically buy... Gruber's gang some time to break into this vault essentially, because when he's Yeah, he's given his demands. He's like, I want, you know, the 10 members of the Asian Dawn released. And it cuts back to Gruber and his right-hand man. And he's kind of looking really confused at Hans Gruber. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. He's like, and Hans goes, oh, I read about them in the Times or whatever. Has no idea
who
these people are.
And he only, so gives, just to, and he only gives them 2 hours to do it. And they're like, I can't do that that fast. Like, and so it's not
And because that's all they and need all to the get other... into the vault is just 2 hours. Mm. So
all the other cops in this are like, really kind of terrible. Al Powell is the only good one. So you've got the like the chief of LA that is just useless. I can't remember who plays him, but he's great at being.
He's got an annoying face.
Yeah.
he's a shit cop that just doubts everything John McClane's telling. And then the FBI come along, and they're just a couple of fucking alpha males that just want explosions and chaos, basically. Because they're just like, they're floating in the they're flying in the helicopter, and they're talking about, oh, you know, what do you reckon the odds will be, or how much collateral damage you think we're going to get, how many people are going to die? He's like, oh, maybe, you know, 10 dead hostages, and they're like, oh, I can live with that. Cool, let's go ahead with this suicide mission.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I just bring up, I think this could be my least favorite movie cliche, is the bickering between departments in the fucking police. God damn, I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it. Like, Al Powell, our best buddy, is like trying to tell his supervisor, and the supervisor doesn't care at all. And then the FBI come in and think they're the hot dogs. And like, I hate it. I hate any time that happens. The sergeant, the sergeant's a dickhead, I just hate it. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
It just tries to create this dumb conflict. And I'm like, just grow up. What the fuck?
Work together. We're all friends here.
Come on. If you all hug it out, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
I hate it. Anyway.
So in the meantime, they're breaking into the vault. Carl, who is another one of the German boys, is enraged by the death of his brother, Tony.
Carl has great hair.
Yeah.
Carl is like a Fabio with his long blonde hair.
It's so good.
He looks like a Bond villain.
He does look like a Bond villain. A lot of the gang members are actually German as well, which I quite like for authenticity.
That is good.
But
yeah, so he attacks McClane and is apparently killed. Gruber sees a news report by Richard Thornburg on McClane's children, and because Holly was doing that stupid thing where she's looking at the pictures of her children, she's like, "Ooh, I'm so sad, I'm a hostage, and my children's pictures are right there," instead of, you know, playing it cool.
Can we talk about this fucking journalist?
The fucking reporter?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Because we spoke about it a little bit in our Scream episode where Courtney Cox is a journalist, but she's probably like the least annoying movie journalist ever.
Because
she kind of serves a purpose, and she actually, you know, serves to help the story. Whereas, unlike this guy and so many others, is just there for you to hate on because they find out who John McClane is and that Holly is one of the journalists. Holly is one of the hostages. And so the journalist goes to the house and bullies his way in there.
Yeah.
And he's such a fuckwit.
But
there's a great part that we kind of skipped over. It's not that important, but when we first meet the journalist, he's been listening to a police scanner early on in the movie, and he's picked up what's going on. The journalist is talking to his supervisor. He's like, send me out there, let me cover this. And the supervisor doesn't give a shit. And the anchor of the news program clearly doesn't like this journalist. And they're kind of shooting each other deathies and whatnot. And the journalist turns to the anchor and goes, "Eat it, Harvey." And the news anchor is enraged by this sass he's just copped. And they cut to live news, and he's just giving him deathies the whole time. He wants to rip his head off. That's great.
It's a great little scene.
He's just he's the fucking worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Holly...
I do like... Sorry. Sorry,
I was
going
to keep going. You go.
I was just going to say, I really like that bit, though, because like Holly, at the start of the movie, when she's looking at the photo, and she's obviously having some emotions going through that, and then she obviously puts it down.
Yeah.
And then Hans sits in her office.
Face down.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Hans sits in her office. And so, yeah, he would have probably drawn two and two together, like if the picture was sitting up. But
Yeah.
Because that doesn't happen, and he finds out through the news. It takes a while for that to happen. I just thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Just and a fun little convenience.
She was just being annoying and not playing it cool, and got herself in an even worse situation than they already were. But yeah, so
she's a very Kieran. I was going to say she's a very ballsy character though, because after he, again, paddling back a little bit when Gruber kills Mr. Takagi or whatever his name is, what did we say it was, Takagi. Holly McLean is then she's basically now in charge of everyone, and she's kind of has her first encounter with Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
And she's like, we got a pregnant woman out here. We need this, you know, you're going to have hungry people. And she's giving this gang leader demands.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what idiot made put you in charge? And she's like, you did when you killed my boss. And I'm like, oh, snap.
Bit of sass.
Yeah.
Sassy.
But, which, I mean, as we get to learn, sorry, Ryan, go on.
You go.
I was going to say, she needs to be a kind of a sassy, hard character, because we know that her and John, from what we've seen, have had a pretty rocky relationship lately, and he's kind of a bit hot-headed and bull-headed, and she's not too dissimilar kind of thing.
Yeah.
So she's got a bit of snark about her as well. No wonder their marriage doesn't last in the series.
Yeah.
but a good thing for Holly is she would have got that promotion.
Yeah.
That's true.
She finally got that bathroom office.
Yeah.
Thank God.
She's not looking at the cup as half full.
Yeah.
That's Holly's problem.
But yeah, so
sorry, Kieran, keep going.
Like we said, Gruber deduces that McLean is Holly's husband. The hostages are taken to the roof while Gruber keeps Holly with him. And everything's like, oh no, because McLean knows that they're going to cave the roof in with all these bombs. So he tries to drive the hostages from the roof, and he does it just before Gruber detonates it and destroys the approaching FBI helicopters. So now they're even more up shit creek with even less of a paddle. They're scooping shit in the creek with their hands. And, like,
well, 'cause he,
at this point, like,
he,
McLean is, like, having a horrible time. He's tired, his feet are all cut up, like, he's been fighting the fight by himself. He's just not having a good time.
Well, he jumps off the building in such spectacular manner, because when he goes up and and when he sees, like, all the terrorists are up there on the roof, and he's like, it's a double cross, like, everyone fucking get out of here.
All the hostages
like, what? What are you talking about? Like,
wait, these terrorists aren't to be trusted? They don't have my best interest at heart.
And
what?
And John has his machine gun with him that he's got with the terrorists, and he's like, get out of here, like get out of here, you sheep. And so he starts shooting the gun in the air, where just as the FBI gunship shows up, they see that they think John McClane's a terrorist. So they open fire on him. The hostages run back downstairs. John is kind of trying to dodge helicopter fire. And it's so great, because he finds a fire hose and he wraps it around him like a belt, and he's like, John, what the fuck are you doing? And I love that he doesn't have a plan, basically. He's constantly getting out by the skin of his teeth.
Yeah.
And he jumps off the building right as Hans hits the detonators for the C4, blows it to smithereens, takes out the helicopter. I don't know how this building is still standing.
No.
Because to the bottom, John blew that the fuck up with the...
Yeah,
well,
yeah, that's gone. The top's gone.
It's Nakatomi Plaza. It was built by the Japanese people, and they know how to do architecture. So
yeah, it's just like a really perverted game of Jenga.
Ooh, yeah.
I also like
to point out, like, 50% of the dialogue is just Bruce Willis talking to himself.
It's fun. Yeah.
It is fun. Yeah. He's just muttering to himself the whole time.
He's so cranky.
Questioning.
Yeah.
he's so cranky. He just, he's thrown into this situation and he just doesn't want to accept the task.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like, there's no one else to do it.
This wouldn't happen in New York. I'd have to deal with this 6 months later.
Well, just on top of that, without giving away too many spoilers, at the start of the third one, we meet John McClane and he's hung over his shit. And all hell's broken loose in New York, and he's being personally summoned to deal with it. And he's like, I've got to kill a hangover. And throughout the whole movie, he's grumpy and hungover and angry because he just wants to get rid of his hangover. It's great. You've got to watch Die Hard with a Vengeance. It is. The second's fine. The third is excellent because you've got I've gone blank on his name. Who plays the villain? I'll come back to it. Sorry, Kieran. Go on. I can't believe I've forgotten.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Theo retrieves the van from the parking garage, but Argyle, who's been following the events in his car radio, sorts him out and he's like, "No, no, no, not in my parking garage." So, thank you, Argyle. You're a good boy.
He's a hero.
Yeah.
He's the real hero of the movie.
Yes, Dane?
Jeremy Irons is a villain.
Oh,
of
yeah,
Die Hard
Jeremy
3.
Irons. We love Jeremy
Ooh.
Irons.
Yeah. I can't believe I forgot his name because he is just as incredible as Alan Rickman in this.
Oh, yeah.
Shall
we take this moment to have an Alan Rickman off?
Do you mean like dealing Alan Rickman trivia?
No, you do your Alan Rickman voice. Do your best Alan Rickman voice. It's an Alan Rickman off.
Oh.
I wish I had time.
I don't know if I can. Exactly.
Do it.
Go on.
All right. Potter. All right. Dane.
Go, Dane.
Oh, I don't know. I've got too much pressure, boys.
That's the fun part of an Alan Rickman off.
I've got performance anxiety.
You can do it.
Oh, I don't know. I can't think of any other quotes. Kieran, you go.
Harry Potter. Oh. I love.
What's
Lily
one of his
Potter.
Lines from the movie, Dane?
I love Lily Potter is a MILF.
Oh dear.
Dane, what's one of his lines from the movie?
All this performance, I've forgotten every line that he says.
This is the second time you've spoken out of turn, Miss Granger.
Oh, no, read when he's reading the guy with the machine gun. When he's like, now I have a machine
now
gun.
Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
So good. So good.
10 points to Gryffindor.
Oh man, I can't wait to watch Die Hard 3 when we finish this episode.
I'll be watching Love Actually this weekend and I'll get a whole different range of emotions. How could you do that to Emma Thompson?
Rest in peace, Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
That's sad. Okay, anyway. So, a weary battered McClane finds Holly with Gruber and his remaining henchmen. McClane surrenders to Gruber and is about to be shot, but he's got a pistol taped to his back and he uses his last two bullets to wound Gruber and kill his henchmen. Pew, pew!
It's so good. Like, he comes in because, Holly, everything's gone to shit. All of Gruber's guys are dead, but two other guys. The guy, the computer hacker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got him. Why? He's. I suppose he's been knocked out because
He was in the.
We got that. In the limo, and then this other random character. Anyway, and John comes through and he goes, "Holly," and he sort of stumbles through the hallway and is like, just the building's fucked and John's fucked. He's sort of limping. He's covered in blood. He's covered in filth, and Holly's enraged because she just found out that Hans Gruber's plan is just a robbery, and she's like, "All this, and you're just a petty thief."
Yeah.
And he's like, "I'm an excellent thief." And this is what I wanted to bring up. He's like, "I am an excellent thief, Mrs. McClane, and because I'm about to step up to kidnapping, I think you should show me some more respect." And I'm like, "You've killed so many people." Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure murder is a step above kidnapping. Like, you're stepping down, if anything.
Have you not seen all of the incredible headshots I got today, lady? Like,
and not to mention all the cops they shot and killed when they tried to storm the building.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like, Alan Rickman, you are responsible for all of this.
Yeah. Ho, ho, ho.
You've killed so many people.
But yeah, Gruber's wounded and his accomplice is dead. Gruber crashes through a window, but he grabs onto Holly's wristwatch to try and make like a last ditch attempt to kill the pair. But McClane, he's a speedy, smart boy, and he takes off the clasp of the watch, and it's the best scene ever because, and it's like the most iconic scene of the movie. Gruber falls to his death.
I'm guessing you guys have heard about that when they went to actually drop Alan Rickman. They're like, all right, we'll give you a countdown and we'll drop you. And then they dropped him on the wrong countdown to get an authentic reaction when he's falling.
Yeah, I love that.
He's actually shocked. It's great. Mm. And yeah, he falls and it's he's sort of falling out from the very, whatever the last remaining floor that hasn't been exploded. He's falling and the dickhead police chief goes, oh man, I hope that's not a hostage. Yeah, it's terrific. McClane saved the day.
Yeah.
The last scene is great too, because he has a gun taped to his back with this cute little Christmas tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, which he uses to kill the henchman.
Because he checks his ammo, because he knows he can hear Hans and Holly he can hear Holly yelling against it, so he's like, oh, right, I'm right near my wife. And he checks his machine gun, he's out of ammo. He checks his handgun, he's got 2 bullets left. So he takes the gun to his back in between his shoulders. I don't know how he was able to do that.
Maybe he's double jointed like me. I can do it. I used to be able to put my netball.
Oh, okay.
I used to be able to put my netball patch on my back myself.
Oh, well, quite possibly. And yeah, so he comes in with a machine gun and he pretends that, like, oh, he's surrounded, and he's got his hands on his head, and Hans Gruber goes, oh, we've skipped over the fucking most iconic line as well. My goodness. Just to go back again, we've got the ultimate Die Hard line, the line that everyone knows. When Hans and John are kind of first interacting on the walkie-talkie, and they're kind of bantering back and forth, and he's like, ah, oh, you're a real cowboy, aren't you, Mr. McClane? And then McClane goes, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. And like, and then at this pivotal final scene, Hans thinks that he has John cornered. He's like, what was it you said to me again? Oh, yes. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. And John starts laughing like a madman. He's had a full mental snap. And he pulls the gun from behind his back and he fires off 2 miracle shots. Do you guys want spoilers for the book at all?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll probably.
So I'll say now, if anyone is intending to read it, maybe stop listening now. So in the book, I said it's all very similar to the movie, and John McClane's going to save his daughter instead of his wife, and same sort of an encounter and everything. And McClane shoots Hans, and as Hans goes out the window, he pulls McClane's daughter with him, and so his daughter falls to his death as well. And John McClane's like, yeah. He's like, well, fuck, like, this has all been for nothing. And he starts to leave the building, and he comes across, I think it's a lady terrorist, because there's no lady terrorist in this movie, but there are lady terrorists in the book. And she's like, okay, you win. And she puts the guns down. She's like, yep, don't kill me. And he just shoots her in the head and walks off, because he's just a broken man now. So,
holy shit.
Book spoilies over.
Way more depressing.
That's insane.
Yeah, so, but yeah. Yeah. which is, yeah, you can see why they changed the ending for the movie.
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't think they would have had 5 more movies, 4 more movies.
No.
If they ended like that.
And it's a shame as well, because like you were saying with Terminator, like, and even Terminator 2, such incredible, IP sort of thing. And then they made it a franchise and fucked it to death. But we'll get into that. We haven't quite finished yet. Sorry, Kieran, I've cut you off.
It's okay. I know you're very excited about this one, so.
I am.
So, yeah. Outside, so they make their way outside, and the reporter, Carl, who we thought was fucking dead, surprise, he's not. He ambushes McClane and Holly, but is killed by Al Powell.
Who hasn't fired his gun in years.
Yeah. He hasn't fired his gun in years, because as we figure out, like, you know, he's battling with, you know, he made a mistake, he shot a kid. So he hasn't fired his gun in years, but he did it for his buddy, John McClane, so all is well. Thornburg, when he attempts to interview McClane before Argyle crashes through the parking garage in the limo, and doesn't Holly punch the guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Holly punches him because the reporter runs up and he's like, Mrs. McLean, how do you feel about this awful ordeal you've been through? And she saw the journalist on the news bullying his way in her family home. And she just like Scream, what's the main lady from
Courtney
Scream?
Cox.
No, the main one.
Sydney Prescott.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sydney Prescott, how she smacks a journalist in the face. Holly McLean wastes no time and fucking clocks him right in the nose.
Yeah.
It's like, thank God. You deserve that.
Yeah. And then Argyle to the rescue. He kept his word. He waited. Bless him. Even though everything was fucking exploding above him, he crashes through the parking garage door in the limo. And McLean.
Thank God, John.
Yeah, they all drive away.
Thank
together.
God. Yeah.
Well,
thank God
Argyle was trapped in there because.
Yeah.
Yeah, Argyle was trapped in the parking structure because he tried getting out and realized he couldn't. But yeah, obviously, thank God that the cops didn't kill this unarmed black man. Because he comes. comes crashing through the parking structure garage door and like flies through it, and there's 300 cops around who have just been in like this non-stop shootout. And he pulls up and he's like, hey, what's going on, guys? And it's such a little cool dude thing.
Yeah, that's Die Hard.
He's the coolest of dudes. That is Die Hard.
That's Die Hard.
Mm.
Go watch Die Hard. Die Hard.
Great
is
fun.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Fun. So, do we want to start with if you guys liked Die Hard? What else? What else would you like? Before we get into the trivia, what else would you like?
Yeah, I would love to. Do you have anything, Dana, or can I go?
Ryan, you go, buddy.
Okay, I got two ones that I think are pretty good. So, if you like the movie Speed with our boy Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock. It's obviously another non-stop action movie, probably a bit sillier than this one, but yeah, still quite a good bit of fun. And then maybe my favorite silly action movie that I adore, also starring Keanu, Point Break.
Yeah,
Keanu! With Patrick Swayze, which is such a fun movie. So silly, but yeah, I really think if you like Speed and Point Break, but you haven't seen Die Hard, definitely check it out, because they are very similar.
Speed's a good one. Did anyone watch the remake of Point Break from like 5 years ago?
No.
Nah.
Yeah, I was not interested in the least.
Yeah.
It looked terrible.
I heard they did some good stunts. Like, I think they used some professional, like, daredevils as stuntmen in the movie, because some of the stunts were quite dangerous. But yeah. No interest at all. And why would they choose that actor? He's that random guy.
Who was it?
Oh, I don't know. Mr. Forgettable Face. He's he is MacGruber in the new
Will
in the
Forte.
TV in the no not MacGruber. Who's the other one? The real one. MacGyver.
Oh, MacGyver.
I was like, who's the real one?
Wait. I fucking love MacGruber. I love Will Forte, and I cannot wait for the MacGruber series.
Yeah.
If you want a fantastic comedy, watch MacGruber. It's the only movie to come out of SNL that bombed, but it has such a huge cult following.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. The actor is
Val Kilmer is incredible.
Mm. The actor is Luke Bracey. Whose name I tried to think of. Luke Bracey.
Who was it? Luke Bracey? I've never heard of the guy.
No, you don't. Like, no one knows who he is. And he was playing Johnny Utah. And everyone was like, who the fuck is this guy? Anyway, I love Point Break. Let's watch it one day.
I'd love to do an episode on Point Break.
It's so good. What about you, Dane? You got anything?
I don't know. Because I was trying to rack my brains for the comparison. I mean, there's films where we've talked about on other episodes where and I don't want to repeat myself too often because I do that enough, but obviously he's one man against all odds, so for the female version you've got, you know, Terminator and Alien and stuff, but I don't know what movie I could compare it to, because I think it's just the perfect action movie. It's just excellent. We've said he gets, like, you feel the pain he suffers throughout this movie. you know, he gets more and more desperate and more scrappy as the movie goes on. Mm-hmm. And it's just a kind of a perfect level of violence to this movie. It's not over-the-top gore. Like, Takagi's, the CEO's boss's death is probably the most gory because you got all the brain and bone and everything. I don't know. I don't know what I could compare it to. Die Hard 3?
If for some reason you've only seen Die Hard 3, but not Die Hard 1, if you should watch the first one, yes, you should.
I've got two. I want to see if you guys agree with this. If you like this movie, you would like RoboCop.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've got terrorists, we've got an anguished, like, you know, RoboCop, the guy, you know, he's going through it. He's not a man anymore, he's a robot. There's still a man in there.
I would also love
it's also to an 80s movie.
The original RoboCop. Yeah, I'd love to do an original RoboCop review, because that movie has everything. Like, it's such a snarky movie.
It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
If you liked this movie, you would also like Con Air.
Oh.
Interesting.
Interesting. Action packed. The stakes are high. They're on a plane. They're fucking, you know, nonstop.
Some actors are acting their ass off. Yeah.
We're going to San Juan Tenillo. That's my John Malkovich impression.
I love it. I love John Malkovich. But yeah, like, yeah, you know, there's a hostage situation. They're, you know, they're not good for anyone.
Yeah. I did, my original one was Air Force One. And I was like, does anyone even think that's a very good action movie, though? So I took that off. Yeah.
Air Force One's
probably another one.
Maybe for mine, it's a stretch. It's a fucking stretch. Rambo, the first Rambo. One man against all odds. Yeah. Obviously, he's in Rambo. Yeah. He's ultra capable, but he has a whole... He has a whole police force after him in this rural town, and he gets hurt. He's alone. Mm.
Yeah.
He's scared.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we'll jump into some fun facts. Does anybody have any more fun facts? I know we sprinkled a few throughout, but...
Well, Al DeSoro, who was in charge of the special effects on this, also did the special effects for Predator.
Oh, fun. Mm. Yeah, two banging movies.
Yeah.
Nice. I pretty much only have two, I think. I think you guys said most of mine.
Yeah.
But the fictional Nakatomi Plaza was the headquarters of 20th Century Fox at the time.
Cool. I know, because, like, they go to it in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They do.
Yeah. Because Peralta's favourite movie is Die Hard, and when he goes there, he loses his mind.
But apparently the company charged itself rent for the use of the then unfinished building while they were filming, which is a bit of fun.
That is fun.
And then the other one, which I thought was really weird. So apparently, ironically, Bruce Willis sneered at being the all-American hero, as he is actually more German than most of the terrorists. So,
is he?
Alan Rickman is English, and Bruce Willis was born in West Germany to an American father and a German mother.
There you go.
So he's more German than our Hans Gruber is. Which I was like, that's amazing. So I thought that was pretty funny.
That is really funny.
I never knew. Never knew that he had German lineage.
I do have a few bits of trivia.
Oh, hit me with it.
Just to expand on some of the things I've said before. So Bruce Willis, as we said, he wasn't the first choice to be the titular, you know, John McClane. But he was actually the sixth choice. It was offered to Arnold Schwarzenegger, Burt Reynolds of all people. Sylvester Stallone, Harrison Ford, and if Burt Reynolds didn't shock you, it was also offered to Richard Gere.
Harrison Harrison Ford would make a great John McClane.
I was going to say, Harrison Ford would be perfect in that role as well.
He's so
smarky,
he would be great as John McClane.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could only picture Harrison as John McClane other than Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like that's so weird.
So, Alan Rickman wasn't the first choice to play Hans Gruber. It was offered to Sam Neill, but it was all good because he ended up working with John McTiernan, who 2 years later in The Hunt for Red October. So no tears for Mr. Sam Neill. He still got his little face
bless
out there.
Yep.
And even though many of the terrorists were portrayed as German, the majority of their dialogue throughout the theatrical version was actually gibberish. So they weren't actually speaking German in the theatrical version. They were just like saying German sounding things. And then later they fixed it for the VHS release. And as not to cause any international incidents, the German version of the movie doesn't even recognize the characters as German and instead opting for random Europeans. They don't actually ever say that they're German or anything like that. Because they didn't want, Germany to be like, can we not be the bad guy again?
Please, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
So in the scene where McClane shoots at one of the bad guys from underneath the boardroom table, Bruce Willis actually suffered hearing loss due to the closeness of the gun and the echo of the blanks. And then it also didn't help that McTiernan ordered extra loud blanks in order to deliver a good sense of realism during the shoot. So yeah, so this movie stuck with him forever because he can't fucking hear now because of it.
Jesus.
You can't hear the praise of Die Hard anymore.
Yeah.
Or rather, he can't hear people like me saying, Die Hard has been fucking ruined.
Or me going, Bruce Willis's legacy is destroyed because of these dumbass fucking C-grade movies that you do and you don't put any damn effort into anything anymore.
He is asleep in every film he's done.
He's
for like the
so
last decade.
Bad. He's so bad. It's so disappointing. Like, I know we all love The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
And, like, he's phenomenal in that. And, like, this and Pulp Fiction and, like, so much good stuff. But then now he's just... It's like an embarrassment.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's getting them checks, cashing them checks.
Oh, he's literally...
He's gone the way of Nick Cage, just doing anything and everything all the time.
But I like that Nick Cage does that because he doesn't just do like, C-grade movie. Like, he'll do the weirdest stuff and they actually are kind of good. Whereas Bruce Willis, he's just doing the same thing over and over and over again. Like, at least Nick Cage, say what you will, he's got variety.
Nick Cage is doing these weird art films, whereas Bruce Willis is doing those movies that you see for like $1 in like a big tub where there's 10,000 of the one DVD.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he's doing.
Have you,
straight to
did
DVD.
You guys see the...
Mm.
Kieran, you probably didn't watch it because I know we were talking about how you don't watch trailers, but did you see the trailer that just came out the other day, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent with Nicolas Cage playing Nicolas Cage?
No.
No.
It looks ridiculous. Like, I don't know if it'll be any good, but it's...
I can't wait
till I don't know.
We talk about any Nicolas Cage movie. Nicolas Cage as an actor, I find him so fascinating. He has his own style of acting. So there's method acting. He does neo-shamantic acting. And I won't get into it because he's not even in this movie, but fuck, he's a fascinating person. He also named his son Kal-El, which is Superman's name, from where he... When he
did he?
Yeah, because Superman's an alien, and yeah, his son's name is Kal-El.
And he bought, like, one of the best dinosaur fossils in the world.
Yeah.
I think it was, like, a Triceratops, and he just bought it. Because he was like, yes, that's sick.
He lives in a haunted house. He's just cool.
He is cool.
But do you boys have any reviews that you'd like to share?
Fuck.
I have two good ones.
Ooh.
I had one, which I thought was quite long, so I've gotten rid of that one. But this one is by Dirk H. It's 5 stars. Oh, sorry, 5 stars, but he actually wrote it's 6 out of 5. And he said, this film has done for the action genre what Viagra has done for old men.
I love that.
That's a pretty good one. And then this other one, which is also a 4.5 by Matthew, said, Die Hard is the film equivalent of how ancient Roman cement structures still stand 2,000 years later, but modern concrete dissolves within two generations. So he's taking a bit of a stab at modern day action movies.
Oofed.
Yeah, which is a bit of fun.
I've got a, yeah. I've got a 1 star and a 5 star.
Ooh. Yeah, so what do you got?
I've got a 5 star review. So Die Hard is an action-packed picture with a capital A. In fact, you might as well go ahead and capitalize the whole darn word. 5 stars. So it's not just action, it's action!
Action!
And then my 1 star is just not a Christmas movie. 1 star.
What? There was so much Christmas throughout it. It's insane. What is that? Bloody hell. Bloody idiots.
Well, I've just got myself a little 5-star review, which basically says, still the prototype of a modern action yarn. Its status was secured so rapidly that subsequent action romps are invariably described as Die Hard on a train or Die Hard on a plane, bus, Zeppelin, tricycle, you get the idea. So I kind of like that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah. Like,
I was going to say, like, Con Air is Die Hard on a plane, like kind of what you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, the reason it's so popular too is, and like everyone compares it to other action movies, is it's just so simple. It is the most simple premise ever. Everything takes place in one building. That's it. The action's inside, there's a little bit out, and it's just one man just kicking ass. Like,
yeah.
It's just the simplest premise, but it works so well in this movie. Yeah.
And I love that, it's one of those 80s movies that wastes no time. Like, we're into it 5 minutes into the movie. We kind of know exactly who everyone is, what their plan is, what's going on. There's just a focus on really just two characters, and everyone else takes a back step to it. And we're just watching this really simple thing of this walkie-talkie taunting between these two guys who, for half the film, never meet. It's 100 chef kisses.
100 incredible chef kisses. You heard it here first, guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, have you guys been... Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was going to spin the wheel, but we'll do... Yeah, go.
Yeah. Have you guys been watching anything good lately that you wanted to bring out?
Yes.
Oh.
I have been watching... There's a Tiger King spin-off that is on Netflix. It's only 3 episodes, and I fucking wish it went for longer. Because if you don't know, I love horror movies, and I love true crime, especially things about cults. And there's a new Tiger King spin-off about Doc Antle and his little Tiger King cult. And God, amazing.
Because he's the one with all the young girls, right?
Yeah, and he actually was a part of a cult at Yoga Land, which was like a yoga cult with a yoga guru and stuff. So it's so interesting, and I love culty shit. So if you like true crime, if you like Tiger King, I definitely recommend it. It's only 3 episodes, and like I said, I wish it was more than 3 episodes. I wish they did a whole season's worth, because it was so compelling. I loved it.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, damn.
What about you, Ryan? Have you watched anything?
We've just started watching Only Murders in the Building with Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. If you guys have seen it.
Oh!
See, I love Steve Martin and Martin Short. It's a pretty...
Yeah, and like, I think Selena Gomez is my favorite character in it. It's a really funny, weird show. So the three of these guys, they all listen to this murder podcast, which is like where they solve a true crimes pretty much, and then there happens to be a murder in their building. So the three of them, Selena Gomez, who's like in her 20s, and then these two old guys, all come together and try and solve the murder that's taking place in their building.
That sounds really cool.
It's good. Yeah, it's a comedy. It's pretty light. Like, the episodes are only half an hour. But yeah, so far so good. It's it's pretty fun. It's pretty funny. But yeah, it's good to see Steve Martin and Martin Short doing some stuff, because I don't remember the last time I saw them in anything.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I watched their special that they did together eight years ago, and I thought it was great. So, no, that sounds like I'm gonna put that on my watch list.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus in Australia.
Nice.
So,
what about you, Dano Potato? You watched anything?
I have actually been watching a bit of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the latest season that came out for that. I'm a big Larry David fan. I'm a big Seinfeld fan. And yeah, I'm having a good old time. I just love stuff that involves shouting and arguing. And that happens, like, that's 90% of that show. So, I've been working my way through that. I mentioned to you guys before that I'd been watching the anime of Cowboy Bebop. Mm-hmm. Also, how fucking funny that live action got cancelled right away.
Yes, yeah, so funny.
Immediately, yep.
Yeah.
I love it.
But like, it's so dumb the way they do it. Because I was like, oh, maybe I'll give that a watch. And then I'm like, oh, well, I'm not going to anymore.
Yeah.
Like, oh, sorry, it's already canned. Okay, I don't care about it.
That's the thing with Netflix, though. They do everything based on data. That's how the American version of House of Cards was made. It was all data. They signed up for a whole season of it without actually a pilot or anything. They were just like, the data says this is going to be the best show ever. And then Kevin Spacey had to go and ruin everything and be fucking disgusting. So there you go.
Yeah.
Oh,
did you guys hear that the? Did you guys hear that the production company that makes House of Cards for Netflix is suing Kevin Spacey?
Really?
Oh.
Yeah, because they estimated they lost over $30 million because of him.
Fuck yeah, sue him.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, fuck that guy. Yeah. Anyway.
I rewatched Baby Driver recently, and like,
it's such a good movie, though.
John Hamm.
I adore John Hamm, but I'm like, man, I wish it was less Kevin Spacey in this movie.
Oh no!
Yeah.
The worst thing is he's good in it too.
Yeah, he's good.
Kevin Spacey is an excellent,
really
actor.
Good
he's an
in
excellent
it.
Actor.
Yeah,
he's just a piece of shit.
He's just the worst.
He's a real fucking scumbag, but yeah, he's ruined so many movies of his that I love him in.
Yeah, there's like the usual suspects. I personally, if I find out stuff that I cannot morally agree with him as a person, cannot watch his movies and enjoy it anymore because just can't. Like, it's, you know, R. Kelly, Ignition is like a fucking banger of a song. Will not listen to it because he cannot have my money. Fuck you,
he does not deserve my sense.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I also want to mention, I've been listening to a really good podcast, and guys, I just said I like hearing about true crime and cults and stuff. It's called Leaving Eden. They talk about like the fundamentalist church movement in the US. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that reality show called 19 Kids and Counting about the family with 19 children. So they talk about like that because it's all come out that they've all like, you know, been child predators. They've been distributing child sexual assault material and stuff like that. So if you like that type of stuff, it's only a relatively new podcast. It's only been out for about a year. So they started off where we're started right now. So if you want to listen to
it. Yeah, damn.
They're really cool. But in saying that, this is our second last episode of the year. So
the penultimate episode.
Yeah.
This is episode 10, guys. This is double digits, baby.
Woo,
oh boy.
Baby. but like I was gonna say, we're gonna, for the last thing of the year, we're gonna mix things up a little bit. We're gonna spin the wheel of movies to pick a movie.
Yeah.
Are you able to share your screen, Kieran?
Yeah, I'm going to.
We've come up with ten movies each. And we've thrown it into the mystery wheel, and that's going to be the next one we talk about.
So it's a real mixed bag of good, bad, and ones we haven't seen that we've always wanted to see.
I'll shuffle this a couple times so that it's really mixed up. Are we ready?
Yeah,
I'm ready.
Whoa, spin the wheel. What are we watching? Swordfish.
What the fuck is Swordfish?
Have you ever seen Swordfish?
No.
Is that the one with Hugh Jackman?
Yeah, Hugh Jackman and John Travolta.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Why do I have to do it?
No, Dane.
I did.
Dane picked it, so he's the host.
Yeah. Oh.
That's the rule for the spinny boy. When we spin the wheel, whoever spun it, or whoever's
thing got picked and they put it in there.
Yeah. Swordfish, okay. John Travolta, Hugh Jackman, Don Shield.
Is it any good? Stop Is it a good movie?
Well, I'm interested to see if it holds up, because I think it was 2004. It came out around that time, and it has, like, it's an awesome little thriller, little crime thriller. It was before John Travolta got really terrible. Like, he hams it up in this movie, but it's it's a good time. Wow, first spin of the wheel's my pick. I'm excited.
I'm actually kind of excited because I've never heard of this movie and I've never watched it before, so I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of things to say about it.
Yeah, look, I'm sure I will have... I've got a feeling it's not going to hold up as much, but I still really want to see it. It's a great blockbuster. It's a lot of fun. We're going to talk about it next week for our last episode of the year. Boy, oh boy, am I keen.
Oh yeah. Boy. Well... I'll read my little outro.
Please do.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode of Ticket Stubs. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to like, share, subscribe, or leave us a review. We want to know what you thought of the movie. Send us a message at ticketstubspod@gmail.com or head to ticketstubspodcast.com/contact to tell us what you really think, and we'll read it out in future episodes. You can find all the links in our show notes. Ta-ta! Thank you for watching Die Hard with me, boys.
Thank you, no guys.
Great recommendation, CC.
Yeah.
I'm really in the Christmas spirit now. Now that I've seen Hans fall to his death, I'm fully in the spirit.
Yep, my Christmas hat's on.
Die Hard with a Vengeance is great. Watch it this weekend, my friends.
I'll see if I've got time. I've got to do my Christmas shopping.
All right. Until next week.
Hooroo, it's been a pleasure. Boys.
Bye, guys.
See you, buddies.
Bye-bye,
boys.
Bye-bye.